Hi, my name is Katie Ward, and I'm the Commissioner and CAO of Ontario's Pay Equity Commission. This is a podcast about economics, equity, women work, and money. Welcome to Level the Playing Field. We want to make the world a more equitable place where women can work, live, and thrive. In this podcast, we take the equity conversation to new heights to impact change. Speaking with economists, policymakers, and global thought leaders, we wanted to talk about and investigate the impact the global pandemic has had on women, and examine pay equity's resurgence as an imperative to economic recovery. Recently, we've coined the terms she-session, she-covery, with governments and agencies and businesses talking about a feminist post-COVID recovery. This series is intended to keep that conversation going so policymakers, thought leaders, executives, and professionals in the equity and inclusion ecosystem continue creating legislation or programs that address women's economic justice, support closing the gender wage gap, and promote women's participation in the labor market. In this episode, we're going to introduce you to two of my colleagues at the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, and the International Labor Organization, ILO. Both organizations were instrumental in inaugurating International Equal Pay Day. Together, in collaboration with United Nations Women, the OECD and the ILO make up the Equal Pay International Coalition, or EPIC. EPIC advocates and organizes for equal pay globally. My first guest is Monica Quesser. She's head of the Social Policy Division and senior counselor to the Director of the Employment, Labor, and Social Affairs Directorate at the OECD. OECD, as you know, leads the Equal Pay International Coalition together with United Nations Women and the International Labor Organization. And we know that OECD members have seen progress in closing the gender wage gap, though the gap does persist across OECD members. So I wanted to ask you, why does that gap persist from what you've learned through research, and what needs to be done to continue to close the gap?
So the Equal Pay International Coalition is indeed a very interesting initiative that the OECD, the ILO, and UN Women together founded. And we're so delighted to have many countries now on board. Canada is a big player in EPIC, as we call it. And there's companies there, there's trade unions there, countries, like I said, international organizations. So we're really happy that this is taking off and that we're building a truly coalition that is fighting this gender pay gap. I think we have to work on different areas. First of all, we have to understand it better. And unfortunately, despite data, despite the best analysis, when you do the calculations and you decompose, you look at here's the gap, the full gap, and then you chop it up into little pieces, what we call decompose, and say this part comes from the fact that girls are going into different occupations. This part comes from the fact that they have children. Then there's different sectors in which women work. So it's not only the education, but even we looked at even women who were going into STEM and who were trained to be scientists. Oftentimes they ended up in schools teaching science, but being in a lab or being in an innovative company doing science there. So it's not only what you study, but then where you go. Do you go to the private sector? Do you go to the public sector? Do you work full hours, or do you spend a lot of time working shorter hours because you're trying to combine it with school time of children? So these are all factors. But then there's a huge part of this gender wage gap, which is called unexplained. That means you don't really know where it comes from. And what is that? Those are the more nasty things like discrimination. These are things we all know exist, but you can't really measure them. So there's other factors that come into play, which we really have to know more about, and we have to get a better handle on, and we have to continue to push hard and explore further how to do this.
Can you tell us how the OECD's gender data portal helps policymakers and leaders better understand the gender gaps?
Sure. The OECD Gender Data Portal is a collection. It's like a platform where we collect lots of different things. As the name says, data is, of course, a really important part of it. And data is what drives policy. So that's why we at the OECD really place so much emphasis on data. if we don't know what's really going on, it's going to be very hard to convince anybody to change anything. So it's not enough to say, oh, but women are disadvantaged in the labor market and they don't get nice jobs and so on. No, we really have to document it. We have to say, how much is the gender wage gap? In what sectors is it happening? At what ages is it happening? When does it kick in? Where does it come from? Hence, education. You mentioned that we have at the OECD education, employment, and entrepreneurship. And those are what we call the three E's. This is where 10 years ago we started in our gender initiative, because education is really where inequality foundations are laid. So we have all these data and we put them there, and the data portal can enable everybody, whether they're researchers, students, policymakers, anybody who visits this data portal, to select indicators and to choose their comparator countries. So it's a very easy thing to use. And I was told actually that journalists love it, because if you want to go and, you know, write an article and find how does Canada compare, how does another country compare, and then you say, I don't really want to be compared to Japan, I'd rather be compared to the Americas. So you click on the countries you want to look at and you get it all. So it's a very easy and accessible way to get a very clear picture and a quantitative picture on what is going on. And not only that, beyond data, you also will find links to videos, to ongoing work, to events, to blogs, and many other things. And in the last 10 years, the OECD has expanded beyond those three E's, the education, employment, and entrepreneurship, into many other areas. So you will find many other topics: digitalization and women, women in agriculture, women in trade, women in environment. So we have many other topics now that are also covered by our work.
Now I want to introduce you to Manuela Pozen. She's a senior specialist on gender equality with the International Labour Organization. Together, we're going to examine what data tells us about global trends in wage equity, women's employment, and how the care economy impacts both of these spheres.
So September 18th, 2020, marked the inaugural International Equal Pay Day. And this day of recognition was launched in the middle of a global pandemic that we know disproportionately affected women in the workplace. What was the impetus that made recognizing this day so compelling at this time?
International Equal Pay Day last year, and this year as well, is a reminder of the inequalities that persist in the world of work, but it's also a call to action. It's a moment to celebrate and to call all actors in the labor market, or anyone that can do something to address the issues of gender equality in the world of work, and to address the issue of equal pay for work of equal value. So the EPIC, Equal Pay International Coalition, we're very proud to be part of celebrating International Equal Pay Day. And we look forward to the next one, which will be on the 18th of September.
In 2019, your team did some really exceptional research on women at work called the Quantum Leap for Gender Equality, which highlighted some persistent barriers for women. What barriers were identified related to the gender wage gap?
Thanks for this question. And you see, when we look at the gender pay gap, we are confronted with a very uncomfortable data because gender wage gap remains 18.8% throughout the world, ranging from 12.6% in low-income countries to 29% in upper-middle-income countries. So it is an issue that is widespread. It's in pretty much everywhere, every country. And it's something that calls for clearly some clear answers. But you're asking me about the reasons and the barriers. And the gender wage gap is the result of compounded inequalities that accumulate over women's time, over lifetime. And these inequalities that accumulate are also exacerbated by multiple grounds of discrimination, such as ethnicity, color, race, migration status, age, and more. And so here we need a compass, you know, to navigate all of this, because these are just some of the reasons. As I said, it's a very complex, the gender wage gap is the result of many, many different factors. And so the compass is the international treaty, the International Convention of the International Labor Organization, Convention Number 100, which is on equal remuneration. This is very important because it is essential to address the conscious and unconscious biases in the determination of the value of the work that is performed by women relatively to the work performed by men. And here I would just like to underline that when we talk about the right to receive equal pay, this is not confined to equal or similar work. So we're not talking just of two people doing the same or similar job and being paid equally. But here we're also talking about extending about the work that may be of an entirely different nature. So two people doing different jobs, but when you actually evaluate these jobs, their value might be very similar.
You know, another thing that, or compounding factor, I should say, is unpaid care work. And in the ILO care report, the magnitude of unpaid work globally was highlighted. And in many ways, we've already said this, COVID shone a light on the ways in which unpaid labor actually underpins our economy. And you said in an early interview that, I love this quote, the heart of change in care work is a change in the power relationship between men and women in unpaid work, so women can be present in the workforce. So how is that power relationship between gender and unpaid work different across developed and developing countries? You've hit on this a little bit, but and in what way, if any, shifts are you seeing in the division of unpaid labor?
This is a very important question because you're touching on one of the key issues that we need to address when we want to advance the discourse on gender equality, which is the heavy amount of unpaid care work that women and men, but women in particular, do on daily basis for no remuneration. And that is work that is necessary, essential for any progression of the society, because it's an extremely important part of the normal functioning of societies. Mm-hmm. And so here we have quite disturbing data in reality, because across the world, and there is no exception, women perform 3/4 of unpaid care work. Mm-hmm. So 22% of the total amount of hours dedicated to unpaid care work, which goes from taking care of yourself or taking care of your children, of your family members, etc., is provided by women. And in no country in the world do men and women provide an equal share of unpaid care work. So this is not happening anywhere, not even in those countries that have advanced tremendously on trying to redistribute unpaid care work. So women globally every day perform 4 hours and 25 minutes of unpaid care work compared to 1 hour and 23 minutes for men. And if we were to do some, if we were to play around with these numbers, we would be talking of 2 billion people working 8 hours per day for free with no remuneration. And if we were to give a value to these hours, we would be talking of approximately $11 trillion, percent of the global GDP. So we are talking of, an important share.
Significant.
That goes completely invisible and that is not remunerated and that is distributed in a very unfair way. Mm. Now, you were asking me about the differences. There are certainly differences in countries, but in reality, the differences are very little. We can say, for instance, that women spend more time in unpaid care work than men in every region. ranging from 1.7 times more in the Americas to 4.7 times in the Arab states. So here the question is, what shifts are we seeing in terms of division of unpaid care work? And we can say that there is certainly more attention to the issue on a global scale and also at country levels, because there is an understanding of the fact that being productive also means to be able to take care of whoever need to take care without too much stress, and to be able to dedicate more time to be productive. But in the current organization of societies, there's quite a lot of work that needs to be done to redistribute unpaid care work. But reconciling the worlds of work with the world of care is one of the key challenges that we really need to actively, attack and try to work on it. And to do that, we need reliable gender disaggregated data. That's certainly an important aspect. But what we need the most is well-designed care infrastructures, care services, care leave policies, and combined flexible working arrangements. And I think COVID has advanced a little bit this discourse.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Level the Paying Field. This is such an important discussion. And this series is intended to keep the conversation going so policymakers, thought leaders, executives, and professionals in the equity and inclusion ecosystem continue creating legislation or programs that address women's economic justice, support closing the gender wage gap, and promote women's participation in the labor market. We'd be thrilled if you shared this podcast on social media so we can elevate the equity conversation. This conversation is part of a series published by the Pay Equity Commission of Ontario to examine economics, equity, women, work, and money. You can learn more at levelthepayingfield.ca. I'm Katie Ward, and thank you for listening to Level the Paying Field.